His talk is entitled Soldiers and Tourists, the Subjective Selves of Puerto Rico's Modern Architecture.
Good morning. This is the first time I am in Jamaica. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for the Alliance of UTEC and MoMA. I'm definitely not a bilingual person, as I would like to be, but so for me, in order to speak in English, I have to write it down to sound, to be more in control of what I have to say, so please bear with me. I will speak very slowly to try to cope with the accent differences that we all are used to right now. Okay. History is a commodity in Puerto Rican culture. It dictates social hierarchies as it exercises its hegemonic power to produce value. To claim one owns history as a possession is not only a triumph in itself, that of being able to trace one's life back to an advantageous point of origin, but also an authorization to distribute it as a brand. To survive the historical inquiry without having to acknowledge shameful events or dirty family secrets is a privilege. Those who manage to connect their past to a deified historical account showcase their history as a precious commodity, a convenient escape from the island's vulgarity, and a priceless identity passport that could lead to first world alliances in spite of the prevailing third world conditions. Still, most personal histories come in less than perfect packages, and in that sense, it is often preferable to forget and redo the past, surveying for new facts that may be stacked over each other in strategic ways. In these historical makeovers, the selection of the right mnemonic devices is as important as the connections between them, as is the case with any good piece of narrative. The facts, isolated from a consensual historical context, are accumulated like hardware store inventory, a kit of parts ready for artifactual assemblage. Modern architecture in Puerto Rico has functioned as a pseudo-mnemonic device since its very first insertions into the island's imagination. A tainted past provided the raw material for a new manufactured memory, to begin again, to forget what was left from previous colonial enterprises, to reconfigure the immediate past as a sign of the future, to overcome tropical disease for tropical pleasure. All these defined the agenda of Puerto Rican modern architecture. Although many connections could be drawn to the European models that claimed a similar emancipation from the past, or to the Brazilian chapter of modern architecture that sought to build the promise of a future that was yet to occur, there is something rather unique about the Puerto Rican modernist tradition. To begin with, the players were quite different. On that aspect, I would argue that the local government was not the intellectual author of the modern agenda, a role that is so often hyperbolized in many historical accounts. I would argue instead that it was the conspicuous alliance of the military and hotel industry that best approximated the role of author. I would even say that their actions transcended the actual implantation of the modernist tabula rasa, but that they erase memory as much as they produce it, and that it was in these exchanges and negotiations of fact and fantasy that the modern movement took place in the island. After all the discussions on the spatial qualities of the Puerto Rican modern tradition, I prefer to look at the imagination as the target space of this architectural body. Architectural forms are no more than props for a superproduction of fictions and dreams. Today, I would argue that modern architecture played a major role in reconfiguring a collective memory of source, and that its interest was equally divided between an ideological break with the past and the manufacturing of a new past, a brand new history. Back in 1955, when the Institute of Puerto Rican Culture was created, as part of a state initiative to decriminalize Puerto Rican symbols that were strictly forbidden before the creation of the Estado Libre Asociado, roughly translated as Commonwealth, a sanitizing operation that folklorized the remains of a very selective memory was set in motion. A sentimental storytelling approach took over what should have been a rigorous historical account. A myth social, the organic fusion of races leading to Puerto Ricanidad became part of both the state official discourse and the self-identity of every man and woman. Left behind were the nasty episodes of slavery and domination, as has been the norm in other Caribbean countries and in the American South, places that have been periodically reinvented with a rather flexible imagination. To mitigate with myth what is too painful to acknowledge as history grew to be the standard approach among the cultural technocrats that took the mission of rewriting the past for a furiously modern and contemporary Puerto Rican audience in the second half of the 20th century. Almost everybody agreed with the appearance of this brand new version of history, and in time, few remembered the rumors and marginal accounts from which it was constructed. Modern architecture helped us forget. As one becomes familiarized with the falsification and lies that pollute the popular imagination, one becomes aware that, in essence, there is no history in Puerto Rico, but a monumental void. An amnesic realm of folk memories and mystification lies at the place where a contradictory, yet dynamic historical account should have been. This void space is so charged with ideology and repression that one could experience regular attacks of paranoid fear while engaging in the tremendously criminal act of articulating a new interpretation of the abject historical body. Ignited by this problematic void, a fetishistic compulsion toward collecting historical facts deters serious analysis. Information is taxonomized before it is scrutinized. The modern masters are created before one gets the opportunity to cross-examine them with their flaws and shortcomings. It is a don't touch the relic policy that has ended up dominating the tone of discussion on modern architecture in Puerto Rico. If Manfredo Tafuri notoriously claimed the absence of history in the era of criticism, I will have to say that in Puerto Rico, in Puerto Rican architectural discourse, there is neither history nor criticism when addressing modern architecture. Nevertheless, there is a positive side to this monumental void, namely the fertile ground it provides for a speculative and counterfactual thought. This mental position could foster a more prolific narrative vehicle for criticism than the patrimonial celebration of the architectural past that has been the norm when addressing both colonial and modern architecture in Puerto Rico. Modern architecture in Puerto Rico, it is a fascinating case study of myth-making and ideological co-opting. The rights over a narrative have become a battleground for generational misunderstandings and gremial conflict. On one side, we find the late modernists that never recovered from the religious proclivities of the modern movement discourse, meaning the mixture of philanthropy and science as positive instrument of social reform. Those who were part of the modern movement last chapters are now revered as paternal figures in the typical fashion of the modernist master. Criticism is seen as an act of treason against their canonic body of work and against the very noble goals. And it could also be taken as an offensive attack on the Puerto Rican identity itself. This is because in recent years, modern architecture has been galvanized to Puerto Rican identity with its so-called adaptations to the tropical weather praised as the foundational signs of the Puerto Rican self. I will address that concept later on today. In another corner, one finds the baby boomers, the ones who once embraced postmodernism and its commodification of history as a valid form-making approach. For those who had seen their stylistic choices ridiculed by an ever-changing architectural value media machine, acknowledging the qualities of modern architecture today in the island became an acto de contrición, a mea culpa of sorts that provide them with the opportunity to refresh their presence and relevance as contemporary architects with the language of readily enforceable compositional strategies and ready-to-wear modern garments. A third group is morally divided between their vintage appreciation of the modern architectural syntax and their urgency to position themselves apart from the reigning baby boomers. The members of this group claim to be the real contemporaries, and to prove so, they systematically erase every trace of modern architecture from the description of their work, because they consider it too historical, although the formal depths remain more than obvious. A co-opted language of neurosciences and post-science fiction dominates their rhetoric, while their designs embrace a wide range of modern formal antiques. All this sounds like a collection of catty rivalries and inconsequential gossip, but it is at the core of the prevailing confusions and fantasy land storytelling that color the discussion of Puerto Rico's modern legacy. I will not try to fill the historical void with yet another spanking new narrative, nor align myself with any of the protagonists of the local architect's family feud. Instead, I want to take this opportunity to share an alternative reading of what seems to be the most important architectural body of work in 20th century Puerto Rico. In essence, I am fascinated by the complex ideological strategies that such simple architecture has been able to carry on. A common misconception in most historical accounts of Puerto Rican modern architecture is the so-called adaptation of previous models to the tropical weather. In addition to keeping in line with the prevailing evolutionary approach that is often used when periodizing the reading of Caribbean cultures, the narrative of transforming European and American precedents enforces a rhetoric of identity search in architecture that adds a metaphysical dimension to the practical adjustment that were implemented. While this interpretation benefits the local neo-national urges to add new entries to the identity catalog of science, it is unsustainable when measured against the larger picture of modernist discourse. The practical reconfigurations of the modern syntax in their transit from the north to the Tropic of Cancer should not be called adaptations, but disadaptations. The very stripping down of glass and the removal of superfluous insulating layers was very easily executed when transferring the European-American model to Puerto Rico. In Europe and in the United States, modern architecture did not come about with such ease. There, the European-American architect had to work arduously to adapt the modern open boxes to harsh weather and conditions that resist the very notion of integrating inside and outside. They are the ones who were out of place when attempting to produce the modern edifice. The conceptual presence of a benign weather in modern ideology is older than modern architecture itself, because it is a fact that a modern man was walking on earth long before he was able to live in a modern house. The origin of a modern subjectivity, commonly associated with the machine operator, the engineer, or even the enlightened scientist who symbolized action, could also be related to the naked classical body, and I mean literally naked here. It was Quatermain de Quincy who fantasized about a naked Greco-Roman body whose privileged exposure to a warmer weather led to a closer contact with nature, the source of all truth. It is an Enlightenment idea to connect the classical body, which is a pleasure to wash, to the scientist that designs the washing devices. Modern subjectivity is at the intersection of both figures, the naked guy and the well-dressed scientist. But it was the house of the former, not the laboratory of the later, that stole the imagination of modern architects. The modern house is an open house, transparent and defiant of a natural world in which the weather forecast is eternally optimistic, allowing for the agile movement of the nude Greco-Roman body. Glass became a necessity in northern climates, a means to achieve a symbolic transparency when a literal one was impossible. For those architects who brought to the island the formal dialogues of modernity, the tropical weather opened up the opportunity to strip down the building of unnecessary clothing, therefore restoring the presence of the original naked body for a brand new classical era of technological progress and scientific knowledge. Modern architecture felt at home in Puerto Rico, and that was not a historical coincidence. Notions of a rational architecture, so deeply rooted in modern ideology, were often defended by deploying primitive huts in French Caribbean settings as evidence. Here again, the scientist mated with what he considered to be a native body. And it should be pointed out that this body was as mystified during the Enlightenment as was the other naked body, the classical one. Increasingly, both creatures became indistinguishable from each other, while the European gaze gained a distinct recognizability with respect to any previous form of looking. A rational architecture was developed upon the honesty and ingenuity of the naked builder who was closely watched by his European molester. To bring back the European man to the Caribbean, or the American-trained architect that gained in school the gravitas of the colonial ruler, is to bring back the notion of the Caribbean as a laboratory of modernity, a la Fresiere. But it is also the consummation of a hidden desire to escape from the very rigidities of rational thought into the playful and informal vastness of modern space. A Garden of Eden in the Caribbean, so to speak, is as much an attack to Western culture and civilization by repositioning the classical model in an ordered primordial setting as it is a confirmation of the positivistic notion that science can release us from time and space constraints. In the long run, the consequences of such openness prove to be disastrous in most modern buildings in the tropics. The impetus to erase the marks of a previously pathologized jungle full of sickening air and tropical disease led to an over-romanticization of the weather in spite of form, and even more traumatically, in spite of function, the ultimate modern scene. One of the biggest challenges of restoring modern architecture in Puerto Rico is the legacy of sick building syndrome, courtesy of the air conditioning devices brought in once the idealized wind and humidity interfered with the building's operation. When restoring those structures, one cannot go back to the previous openness. In disadapting the building to the benign tropical weather, the modern architect brought trouble to paradise. By celebrating modern architecture as cure, they underestimate nature. But even today, those shortcomings are often overlooked as it is preferred to emphasize the happy integration of traditional environmental control techniques with the foreign language of modernity. Once again, the idea of reconciling past and present as the fortunate marriage that procreated national identity is impeding a critical examination of the facts. To look at Puerto Rican modern architecture as the maternity warden of an infantile national identity, removing any reference to the theoretical frameworks of Western architecture for the purpose of overemphasizing the unique as vernacular, has led us to ignore the complex ideological operations that have handled the national unconscious as a design project. Perhaps a more violent account needs to be brought forward to prove that what once looked like paradise was in fact an open battleground of self. There is no need to escape the fact that the Caribbean has been a militarized region since Europe directed its gaze towards it, and even before then. The name itself carries the memories of those violent Caribs whose love of war is well documented. The architecture of science, the rubric that will lead to modern architecture, was already in place in the careful diagramming of colonial towns and in the monumental architecture of fortresses and fortifications implanted by the Spaniards. Science and war were mutually indispensable even before science was acknowledged as a meaningful word. Since colonial time, the systematization of war into building construction and city planning has been as much an instrument of domination as a sign of the instrument itself. It was an ancient Roman strategy of control that the Renaissance subjectivity reenacted in the New World. The Caribbean would be the perfect barbaric landscape for the proliferation of discipline and order, war and science. It is not surprising then to see how much the concept of war is symbolically embedded in the tissue of Caribbean culture.